Joining me now on the Hip Hop Sports Report podcast, also known to you as the preseason podcast of the year, is a very, very special guest, a good friend of mine. I've known this man for nearly 10 years now. It's crazy where the time flies, how it flies like that. I don't know where it goes, but it's been almost 10 years since we first met, and he's a very good friend of mine. He's always supported me. He's always supported my work and the site here. And, you know, I wouldn't have what I have to this point without him, that's for sure, as far as it relates to the site. And he's going to be in my wedding, and he's an awesome guy. He goes by the name of Anthony Houston, Packers fan extraordinaire. But that team got bounced from the playoffs a little while ago, so we'll touch on them momentarily. But, Anthony, welcome to the Hip Hop Sports Report podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on. I will note that you could have just shortened everything to unofficial writing partner of the preseason website of the year. I would have taken that, but you know, that intro is quality. I do appreciate it.
Well, no doubt, no doubt. I mean, I wasn't lying. You know, I mean, I just figured I would throw in all, you know, everything else I said was factual. You know, I've known you for almost 10 years. The Packers got knocked out of the playoffs. These are just facts, you know, it's facts only. Well, I mean, what do you want me to say?
I guess I will go, I'll take what I can get.
There you go. There we go. There we go. So let's jump right into it. We had the championship weekend was this past weekend. Obviously, we saw the Denver Broncos and the Seattle Seahawks advance to Super Bowl 48, I think. That sounds about right, right?
Super Bowl A, B, C, and Z, I think. I don't read Roman numerals. But I have no idea.
I'm not really sure either. But at any rate, I mean, I think it's 48 sounds about right. 48 sounds about right. But so with the Seahawks and the Broncos, it should be a very compelling matchup. Obviously, the number one offense going up against the number one defense. Talk to me a little bit about what you saw at the end of the Seahawks 49ers game, because that seems to be all what everyone is talking about today. Obviously, with the Richard Sherman situation. What did you think of Kaepernick down the stretch of that game and his decision to even go at Richard Sherman with the game on the line, with the season on the line?
I mean, you've got to do it. You've got to do it. You've got probably your most dynamic receiver in the crunch time, and you got to do it, or maybe you don't, but Kaepernick was making the play that he probably saw, but I mean, it's just a matter of this team. It appears that they just have his number, man. It's unfortunate because he's a good young quarterback, but I mean, the telling tale is that he threw 10 interceptions all season and half came against the Seahawks. And that's it right there. Like, is it shocking? Kind of not, you know. Richard Sherman very well may be the best DB in the league right now. And what are you going to do? He was even out of position and still made the play to send his team to the Super Bowl. What are you supposed to do with that?
Well, in fairness to Kaepernick, though, I mean, he did have man coverage there. And he has beaten Seattle once earlier this year. That was just like a few weeks ago, like in December. So, I mean, it shouldn't be totally a foreign thing for him to actually beat Seattle. I mean, he hasn't beaten them in Seattle, obviously, but for him to compete and get close enough to beating them, that shouldn't really surprise us. I mean, I don't know if it's so much that they have his number, but maybe he just kind of screwed the game up down the stretch. Like, I don't know how much of that we can pin on Seattle having his number, especially when he was running up and down the field against them to the tune of like 120, 130 yards rushing or whatever it was. But the last play of the game, again, was Sherman deflecting the pass and another defender for the Seattle Seahawks intercepting it to seal the game. Richard Sherman then goes over to, well, after, like, he hams it up for the crowd, right? Then he goes over to Michael Crabtree, makes sure he catches him before he walks off the field, gives him a little pat on the ass, and then shakes his hand or attempts to shake his hand and says, good game, and then he got mushed by Crabtree. So, You know, and then after the game, of course, he goes into, you know, he goes into WWF mode and just, you know, goes on his little rant. And I thought it was pretty entertaining. I thought it was very entertaining. What did you make of that whole thing? I mean, the beef with Crabtree, the fact that it supposedly stems from some type of charity event that Larry Fitzgerald had. That the two of them had supposedly gotten in an exchange like last summer. First of all, Larry Fitzgerald is like the classiest guy on earth. So like, why would you even fight at his thing? You know what I'm saying? Of all the people whose event you're gonna fight at, like, really, Larry Fitzgerald? Come on. But besides the point, they have history. And so, what did you make of that whole situation between Sherman and Crabtree?
Well, I mean, it boils down to, like you said, they have history. It's not just the fact that they're probably jawing at each other throughout the game. They're division rivals. They have some off-the-field history, and I'm sorry. I have no qualms with Richard Sherman saying whatever he said. I don't believe for a second he just told him good game. But whatever he said to him, they got off-the-field history, and he beat him at the thing that both of them are passionate about. They have put themselves in a situation where they can, you know, have a chance to go to the Super Bowl, go back to the Super Bowl, and he just went and straight stopped him. Nah, he can say whatever he wants to him, and it just is what it is. You're going to mush a man in his face because he just beat you? He still beat you, and you can get mushed all you want. You know, I didn't appreciate the Ric Flair-level look at the referee like something bad just happened afterwards, but, you know, more power to Richard Sherman. And plus, he went to Stanford, so he's probably smarter than me.
Well, I mean, you got to give him credit. The guy made the play. I mean, and I don't know how you feel. I mean, first of all, I agree with you 100% that the going up to him and shaking his hand, saying good game, and then after the game, Richard Sherman basically telling every media outlet, like, no, I just tried to say good game. Like, completely disingenuous. Nobody's buying that, Richard Sherman. You know, I mean, but at the same time, he made the play to send his team to the Super Bowl. I mean, I would have been fired up too. You know, I mean, I call this the preseason podcast of the year. Now, if someone gave us the postseason podcast of the year award, like if we actually earned that, you know, then you wouldn't be able to tell me nothing. What could you tell me at that point? I'd be like, yeah, fool, it's the preseason podcast. No, this is the regular season podcast of the year. You know what I'm saying? I would have just acted an ass completely. So, I mean, you can't really blame Richard Sherman for getting caught up in the moment when he just sent his team to the Super Bowl. Now, one last thing. I don't know how you feel about mushing another man in the face. Like, where do you come off on mushing another grown man in the face?
I mean, we have to make a distinction that he mushed a man in the face who's wearing a face mask. It's not like they were two regular dudes who just mush someone in the face. Like, if that happened at that, let's say that Mike Crabtree mushed Richard Sherman at Larry Fitzgerald's event, it would make perfect sense for him to still be pissed off a year and a half later on a national stage. But that's not what happened. So I'm not ready to, like, mushing in the face, that's a capital offense. But mushing to a face mask, that's a silly offense.
I mean, you just can't mush another grown man, can you? I mean, it's always funny when you see NFL players, like, take swings at each other, but they have helmets on. You know what I'm saying? That's, like, the dumbest thing in the world. It's like, okay, just, like, you need your hands to make a living. We're just going to go ahead and break your own hands punching this guy in a helmet, moron. Like, go for it. But, you know, in this case, you know, he gave him a nice little mush on his way off the field. I mean, I don't know. My thing is, like, first of all, we don't know what was said on the field. So Michael Crabtree is a dude that we know can be a bit of a diva. He can be a little out there, a little. He likes to run his mouth. He likes to think he's the man. You know what I'm saying? He carries himself that way. We've seen it since he was in college. So I mean, I don't really get why people are all jumping down Richard Sherman's throat today, because you don't know what was said on the field, and you don't know the type of things that were being exchanged back and forth throughout the course of the entire game. I mean, this is on the last play of the game, and he just styled on you and sent his team to the Super Bowl. So you can't really blame Richard Sherman for 30 seconds after the game still being pretty fired up about the whole situation. But, you know, at any rate, I do think the better team won. And let me ask you that real quick before we move off the NFC. Do you believe the better team won that football game?
Yes. Yeah. And not by a wide margin or anything like that, but Seattle is just a little bit better at being Seattle than essentially the 49ers are at being the 49ers. I mean, they're the same basic team. And whatever you want to call that team, Seattle is better at it. Smash Mouth football team from the West Coast, Seattle's better at that than 49ers are.
Yeah, I started to say that Seattle's a little bit better at being Seattle than San Francisco is at being Seattle.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, I think I agree. I just noticed that there was a lot of people in the media today that were coming off saying, you know, I think the better team lost that game yesterday. And I'm thinking, like, how? You know, I mean, and don't get me wrong, San Francisco is a great football team. I think they're at the end, we're going to look back on the season and say that they were probably the third best team in the league. And I think that that was accurate. I think that's accurate. But so they're great. At the same time, the 49ers went up against a team that had won one more game than them in the regular season, that had blown them out the last two times they played in that arena or in that stadium. And as you said, they played the little ground and pound smash mouth game a little bit better than San Francisco does, and they had a better defense throughout the course of the entire season. I don't know how you can stand here on Monday and say that the Niners were the better team when Seattle's defense was number one unequivocally throughout the entire season. The Seahawks had the number one defense in the NFL. The 49ers were good, but they were a little shaky, if you recall, during the early part of the season, especially against the run. They fixed all that stuff going forward. Go ahead.
I was just agreeing with you. Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah, so, I mean, they shored all that stuff up as you went towards the end of the season, but I think we put in the article on the website, the Seahawks were first in points against, first in fewest yards, first in takeaways. I mean, this was a team that was dominant on the defensive end all season long. It's the fourth quarter inside their building where they've only lost once in the last two seasons. And in the fourth quarter, what happens? They force a fumble on a strip sack. They catch an interception, and then they catch another interception to seal the deal. So none of that stuff should have surprised us because this is who they are. This is what they do. So, you know, I definitely thought the better team won yesterday. And, you know, as you all recall, this was my preseason pick to win the Super Bowl with the Seattle Seahawks. So from that standpoint, I'm very happy to see that outcome. But at the same time, I was very sad to see the 49ers go down because they were deserving to have gotten back to the Super Bowl. And I especially felt bad for Navarro Bowman, who broke his leg in horrific fashion. And it came out today that he did, in fact, tear his ACL and MCL. So his prospects for next season are very much up in the air at this point. But moving along from that, we're going to jump over to the AFC side of things. The Denver Broncos handily defeated the New England Patriots yesterday. Peyton Manning was nothing short of sensational. And, you know, anybody that knows me knows that I will not hesitate to criticize Peyton Manning, especially in the playoffs. But I can't criticize the guy if he gives me nothing to criticize him about or for. So yesterday, Peyton's line, 32 of 43 for 400 yards, two touchdowns, no interceptions, a 118.4 passer rating. Is Peyton Manning, is this his destiny? Is Peyton Manning just going to win the Super Bowl because he's that great?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, put it this way. He's already done enough this year to give him the momentum to win in the Super Bowl. He's got enough weapons that they can just hit somebody and then make something happen. Like, there's just not enough players to cover all the four horsemen. And, you know, if they get Monte Ballman, there's just not enough room for, there's too much necessary for the Seahawks to cover. I just think, like, it's not going to be a blowout or anything. I'm not saying that Peyton's going to have some sort of flawless line or something like that. But at this point, it just seems like the only way that someone to beat Seattle is to play them not in Seattle and be able to put up some kind of sparkling line, and Peyton can do that.
Well, let me just say this. Peyton Manning is clearly capable of dissecting the Seahawks just like he's dissected pretty much every other defense this season. He's that talented, and you know, he's that good. He can do it. Let me play devil's advocate, though, as I so often like to do when it comes to number 18. This game's going to be played in New York City or in New Jersey, whatever. It's going to be in MetLife Stadium. It's going to be outside. And it's probably going to be cold. It's probably going to be colder than it was in Denver, who, I mean, the gods were smiling down on the Broncos yesterday because miraculously it was like 60 degrees in Denver on January, 60 degrees and sunny with no wind. That's probably never happened before. I'm no meteorologist, but I would venture to guess that that's never happened before in the history of Denver, okay? And it happened yesterday, so things worked out. I don't know that that's going to be the case in 2 weeks in MetLife Stadium. They're going to be going up against the number one defense, as we just alluded to a moment ago, in football. The Seahawks force a ton of turnovers. Part of my criticism over the years about Peyton Manning is that he's been susceptible to turnovers in postseason games. The game that he lost to Baltimore last year, he had 3 turnovers. He had the interception in overtime that ended up sealing their fate. He had a pick six, I think, in the first quarter of that game against the Ravens, and he lost a fumble in the game, too. So, you know, if they can force him into mistakes, you know, Peyton's not one to not make mistakes. You know, Aaron Rodgers just doesn't throw interceptions. Tom Brady just does not throw interceptions. Peyton, for all he is and as great as he is prone to making those types of mistakes from time to time if you can fool him and if you can get the right defense out there. Seattle seems to be capable of doing that. They have huge corners and a very talented and physically imposing secondary that matches up very well with the Denver receivers. I don't know that this game favors the Broncos on paper.
And I'm not disputing that, but it just seems like a situation where you have the Seahawks. We just watched them go, you know, toe to toe with what might end up being the little brother, and it took 3 turnovers in the second half of the game for them to pull out that important win at home. I don't foresee necessarily them getting that kind of opportunity from Peyton and the Broncos. That's the difference there.
I mean, so that's what it sounds like. I think you and I are basically on the same page, though. We think that this game is going to be decided off turnovers. And you can say that about just about every football game almost, that turnovers are going to go a long way in deciding who is victorious and who is shamed in defeat. You know what I'm saying? But I think that in this particular game, it's going to be all the more important. Even more important than it normally is. The turnover battle will be critical in the outcome of Super Bowl 48. The Patriots, on the other hand, they were very interesting. Yesterday, LeGarrette Blount, I don't know if you know this, he had 5 carries in the game, and he ran for 6 yards. That's not good, especially when you compare it to what he did last week. 6 yards is like the distance from like my bed to my refrigerator. Like, you know, we stay in a small apartment right now. You know what I'm saying? But still, it's just, you know, that's just a very, you know, I don't know how. I mean, to Denver's credit, they absolutely shut him down. Now, I don't know if they're going to be able to shut down Marshawn Lynch. But Pot Roast Knighton had a phenomenal game. He was probably the second best player on the field yesterday. The way he shut down any type of running room on the interior, and he still got some pressure on Tom Brady when he dropped back to pass. That guy was unbelievable. I mean, Seattle's offensive line is fantastic, so everything is shaping up to be a really interesting matchup to see how, you know, as far as how it's going to unfold in the Super Bowl. But when you look at the Patriots again, Blunt only had 6 yards rushing. Their leading rusher was Shane Vereen, who had 34 yards on 4 carries. They only ran for 64 yards as a team. So basically that meant Tom Brady was going to have to win the game on his own, and unfortunately he couldn't do it. Brady's line yesterday, 24 of 38, 277, 1 touchdown, no interceptions, for a quarterback passer rating of 93.9, which is pretty good under normal circumstances. He was sacked twice also in the game. I thought Brady actually played pretty well, and I've noticed in the media today he's taking some heat for his performance yesterday, and I don't think that it was necessarily justified. Even like when they would go back and show plays that he missed on during the game, they showed like 3 different overthrows that he had, but really only one of them was critical, I thought, because the other one of them, the guy was kind of like in double coverage. He basically threw it out the back of the end zone. The other one was up the sideline. I think he was trying to hit Austin Colley, but that pass needed to be literally 100% perfect for it to get there. The only crucial misfire that Tom Brady had yesterday was the pass to Julian Edelman in the first half, and I mean, they ran an amazing Madden-like play-action fake, and they fooled the entire Denver defense, and Edelman was running free on a post route, and Brady just overthrew him, and he just missed him. And if he hit him in stride, it probably would have been a touchdown. That was the one play that I think Brady would have loved to have had back, and I think that's the one play that you can kind of hang on him and say, you know what, he messed up there. He didn't deliver on that particular play. Now, Peyton Manning overthrew guys, you know, in the game as well, but obviously he was so lights out the rest of the game that it, you know, that didn't matter. I guess what I'm getting at is, you know, where do the Patriots go from here? I mean, because we know what kind of team they have. We all know that Brady's 36 years old and his time is short, and you can't imagine how frustrated he must be getting at this point in his career, being that it's been 10 years since the Patriots have now won the Super Bowl, or it will be 10 years since they've won the Super Bowl. What do you think happens next for the Patriots? Or if you were in charge, what kind of moves would you be looking to make?
I mean, we've already talked about it previously, but we're only inching closer to the bitter Brady breakup that I had predicted for, I believe, the last 2 years. Or maybe it's 1 year. But it's just going closer to that. It's going to be nasty, and I'm going to laugh and say I was right. I'm going to steal the gif you used from Colbert saying I called it. Because the fact that he's 8-8 in the last so many playoff games or however that works, and you know, the team refuses to draft well. Outside of, you know, some defensive players, which are very good. So the team doesn't draft well. Belichick is consistently trying to be smarter than everybody else and failing at it. And they don't want to spend any money in free agency, which is the Patriot way of doing things. So we're the Patriots are cruising towards a place where they're going to continually say, hey, Tom Brady, we need a little more for, you know, these litany of reasons, you know, Gronk can't stop hurting himself. Aaron Hernandez can't get out of jail or what have you. And so all those things are going to keep happening. And Tom Brady's going to eventually get sick of it. He's going to realize he has got a short leash, and he's going to look at Peyton, especially if Peyton in the Super Bowl this year, and be like, Peyton just went, had 4 neck surgeries and somehow got a Super Bowl ring free after the neck surgeries or something. So I think that eventually, relatively soon, the Patriots and Tom Brady are going to coldly split ways. And, you know, we're going to see Tom Brady try and go for a ring a la Ray Allen and try and hook up with some team that needs its quarterback. It could even be like the Arizona Cardinals or something like that. And go from there and try and get something, pick up a team that's got a good defense and a couple of good receivers and that can run the ball a little bit, and go there and try and win one before we off into the sunset. That's my particular vision of what happened to the Patriots. Eventually we're going to see that Bill Belichick isn't really that great and he's not that smart. And, you know, we'll go from there. I'm going to laugh a ton, and yeah.
And let me just put this out there, America, that Anthony has been pounding this drum for at least a year or two. This is his baby. He firmly believes that there's going to be a nasty breakup between Brady and Belichick, and Tom Brady will finish his career in another uniform other than the New England Patriots, red, white, and blue. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. And don't sleep on the Cardinals, man. They've been putting together good defense for a couple of years. They're a prime candidate to get Tom Brady.
What about the Cleveland Browns? Fingers crossed, fingers crossed, fingers crossed.
What about the Cleveland Browns? Tom Brady would rather probably rather just retire.
That's right, actually. That's actually true. Well, you know, I don't know, man. I'm with you on a lot of that. I mean, it's hard to envision Brady and Belichick actually splitting up, but I agree, man. Like, if I'm Tom Brady, I'm mad as hell right now because, I mean, maybe this year is a little bit different because, I mean, they really did have, like, a lot of things go wrong. I mean, like, a mind-boggling amount of things went wrong for the Patriots this season, and they've been well chronicled on the site. I mean, especially the Hernandez thing right out the gate in the offseason. It was just a black cloud that hung over the team for much of the season. Between that and Gronkowski's, you know, will he come back? Won't he come back? He finally comes back. He's awesome again because he's great, and then he gets hurt again. I mean, the whole thing was just – it was just a roller coaster for the Patriots this year. Didn't they sign the Tim Tebow thing? Wasn't that this past offseason?
Yeah, I think it was. I think he was in the uniform this past season.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, they've dealt with so much crap, basically. You know, I mean, this team has dealt with a lot of crap. And Tom Brady, he gets up there, he stands up there in front of the press, and, you know, he praises everything that they do. He just gives the PC answer every time. You know, well, we just need to work a little harder. We just need to make more plays. That's the kind of, you know, quote that you can expect from him every single time. And I think he puts a lot on himself, but at the same time, he's only human. I think that he has to, you know, look around and say, you know, I can still get it done, but what am I going to really accomplish throwing to Kembrell Tompkins and Danny Amendola once every 4 weeks when he's healthy? I mean, they had an opportunity to trade for Josh Gordon this year. At least that was the rumor. I mean, I wasn't there. I wasn't in the rooms with Belichick. But that was the rumor, was that they could have gotten Josh Gordon for a second-round pick. You don't think they weren't missing Josh Gordon in the game yesterday against Denver? I mean, one guy that can actually, like, you know, take a 10-yard pass and turn it into a 60-yard pass? I mean, because Denver's got, like, three guys that can do that. You know what I'm saying? I mean, there's just no way that they can match up. You know, now granted, the Patriots defense was as much wrong with anything as you know, the Patriots defense was as much of a reason as anything as to why they lost yesterday. But they still managed to hold Denver to 26 points, and Brady was still moving the ball pretty easily in the second half of that game. They just got off to such a slow start, and they couldn't quite dig themselves out of the hole. If I'm Tom Brady, I went into Belichick's office today, and I'm like, look, man, I'm putting it on the table, son. On the table! Like, you gotta get me weapons. You gotta get me some legitimate targets that are over 6 feet tall. You know what I'm saying? Guys that can run, you know, faster than like a 4.7. Like, I like Julian Edelman a lot, you know, but they got Edelman and Amendola. You only need one. You only need both of them guys. Those are the same guy. Like, get Amendola out of here. Just keep Edelman. Like, and then go spend some free agent dollars on another guy that can actually threaten the defense. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you bring Gronkowski back. Maybe you draft another tight end to replace Hernandez. You go out in free agency or whatever. You get a big time wide receiver, somebody that doesn't have to learn, because you know those young receivers, they can take a few years as they're learning with Dobson and Tompkins right now. You go out and maybe you trade for somebody like Josh Gordon. Maybe the price is too high now, but you go make a few of those moves. And then you try to shore up the defense, and you go all in on next year, because you know what? In my opinion, the Patriots have wasted far too many years, as you said, Anthony, trying to outsmart the room. You know, Belichick trying to be the brightest guy out there, trying to win with these young guys because they're cheaper, which is another theory of yours that, you know, the way to win in the NFL is to win with cheap players. You know, in your case, it was more so referring to the quarterback. But in this case, you know, they're paying the quarterback big bucks and they're skimping out on everything else. You gotta push the envelope and you gotta spend a little if you want to get there. I mean, Denver went out and paid Wes Welker and now they're in the Super Bowl. Now, I'm not saying that that's the only reason why they're there, but you got to be willing to break the bank when you have a Hall of Fame quarterback that can still get it done and a Hall of Fame coach that can still get it done. I mean, they got to the AFC Championship game with nothing this year. They had nothing and they made it to the AFC title game. I don't understand why they don't just go all in on next year, much like they did in 07 after they lost to the Colts in the AFC title game. And they went out and they got Randy Moss on the cheap. They went out and got Wes Welker on the cheap. But these guys were talented ball players. But then they went out, they got Dante Stallworth. They went out and revamped their entire receiving core, and they came back reloaded. And what happened? Tom Brady threw 50 touchdowns, and they didn't lose a game until the last 60 seconds of the season. So that's what, if you know, if I'm the Patriots, if I'm a Patriots fan, that's what I would want to see from my team. So it sounds like you do think that the Broncos are going to narrowly defeat the Seahawks in the Super Bowl. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, it's not going to be a blowout. They're going to do it. Peyton's not going to look amazing. He's going to actually earn a Super Bowl for once. But, I mean, it's going to be probably a Peyton Manning win. I mean, the league wants him to win. He's going to get at least four calls, OPI or some kind of face mask that's unreasonable or something like that. So you got to factor that in. They may not hand it to him, but they're going to nudge it to him. I know that much.
Well, we shall see. I think it'll be good. I'm leaning the other way so far. I mean, there's an outside chance that I could change my mind between now and then, but for right now, I do feel like Seattle is the better team. I felt like Seattle was the best team all season. They're a more complete team. I still think Denver's defense is suspect. And frankly, as great as their offense has been, they averaged 38 points a game during the regular season. That number has dropped down considerably. I think they're averaging like 25 points a game so far in the playoffs. And so, you know, going up against the number one defense, you might be in those conditions, you might be able to scale that number down to like 20. I don't know if 20 points is going to be enough to beat the Seahawks, but it'll all be fascinating to watch unfold. Anthony, thank you for joining us on the Hip Hop Sports Report podcast. Anything you'd like to plug? You know, I know you have a blog and a Twitter page. I don't know what you feel comfortable with plugging. I don't know if you want to let everybody into your world right now. I'm not sure, but go for it.
Yeah, I have my own blog. It's at the Houston Life Chronicles. You can check that out if you'd like. I'm on Twitter on AK Houston. Hit me up if you want to learn more about the coming destruction of the Brady-Belichick relationship or anything else that I rant and rave about. That's about it, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yep, and that's at Houston, Houston.
Yeah, spelled correctly. Sorry, Whitney. Get it together.
Suck it, Houston, Texas. All right, thank you, Anthony. Talk to you later, man. We're going to get into one last quick segment here. I want to introduce the first guest that I was ever going to have on the podcast here. I was actually out in Las Vegas with my parents for the holidays, and we actually had some technical difficulties, and I wasn't able to get that podcast up and going. I was going to have my brother on, you know, we're actually going to bring him on at a later date, maybe next week even, to discuss some hip-hop and stuff like that. But his daughter was there, my niece, Nyla, and I'm going to introduce you all to her. She was actually the first official guest on the Hip Hop Sports Report podcast. It's my niece, Nyla Hicks. And so I'm going to play for you the introduction to the Christmas podcast that I was going to do that I ended up not using. But I did get some awesome Nyla audio on there, and I wanted to share that with the world. So thank you all for listening today. Awesome week for football. Looking forward to it. We're going to talk more basketball and hip-hop in the future, y'all, but we had to go heavy on the football this time around. Thank you for listening again. Check us out on Twitter at HHS Report. Get at us at hiphopsportsreport.com. Check out our latest article talking about the Clips, Malice, and Pusha T talking about reuniting with Pharrell and maybe putting out another album. What could that mean for hip hop? What could that mean for Christian rap music? It's an interesting piece, so go ahead and please check that out. And thank you all for joining us. We'll get at y'all later. Peace. Season's greetings, y'all. It's your man JB Hicks back with the preseason podcast of the year. Once again, the Hip Hop Sports Report, the Hip Hop Sports Report podcast, live in full effect. We're recording this on a very late Saturday evening. And that voice you hear is the first ever guest on the Hip Hop Sports Report podcast. Say something, sweetie. Okay, that was my niece. That was my niece, Nyla. She's joining us. This is a very unique edition of the podcast, ladies and gentlemen, so I appreciate you tuning into this very special edition. This is the first live edition of the podcast. We have guests here. We have family in attendance. And I will have a more vocal guest joining us very shortly. But I did want to introduce my lovely niece. She's sitting here in her jam jams right now, a big yellow onesie. And she's been just a delight all weekend long. And sadly, I'm going to be leaving her tomorrow morning. And it makes me sad on the inside. But, you know, just watching her grow up has been very special for me to this point. She's only 18 months old, but she's very smart. In fact, we had a long conversation just before I started recording this podcast of me trying to bargain with her just to get 2 minutes of her time so I could do the intro without her talking over it. And so then I just decided to have her join us. And so, yeah, I know. Well, this is. Let me just say this, Nyla. If by chance you ever happen to listen to this many, many years down the line, your Uncle Justin just wants you to know that he loves you very much, okay? Okay.
False alarms and false starts. All made better by the sound of your heart. Yeah. All the pain of the last time. I prayed so hard it was the last time. Your mama said that you danced for her. Did you wiggle your hands for her? Glory, glory, glory. Sorry. Everything that I prayed for. God's gift, I wish I would have prayed more. God makes no mistakes, I made a few. Rough sledding here and there, but I made it through. I wreak havoc on the world. Get ready for part two. A younger, smarter, faster me. So a pinch of hove, a whole glass of B. Glory.
Glory.
Yeah. The most amazing feeling I feel. Words can't describe what I'm feeling for real. Baby, I paint the sky blue. My greatest creation was you. Your grandpa died of nigga failure. Then he died of liver failure. Deep down, he was a good man. God damn, I can't deliver failure. Badass little hoe. 2 years old, shopping on Savile Row. Woo! Wicked ass Lil B, hard not to spoil you, rotten looking like Lil Me. The most beautifulest thing in this world. Your daddy's little girl, you don't yet know his swaggers, but you was made in Paris. And mama woke up the next day and shot an album package. Last time the miscarriage was so tragic, we was afraid you'd disappear, but nah, baby, you magic. So there you have it, shit happens. Just make sure the plane you on is bigger than your carry-on baggage. Everybody goes through stuff. Life is a gift, Lord. Open it up. You're a child of destiny. You're the child of my destiny. You're my child with the child from Destiny Child. That's a hell of a recipe. Recipe. Glory. 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 Sorry.
Sorry.
Glory.
Glory.
and feeling I feel. Words can't describe what I'm feeling for real. Baby, I paint the sky blue. My greatest creation was you.